Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, February 23rd. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Median Home Price Record Set. Market is making a return to pre-COVID pandemic normal. By Stuart Doreen. All sorts of housing records were set in Midland County during the month of January. The Texas A&M Real Estate Center reported a new record for median price for a home sold in any month, $330,000. A new record for average price for a home sold in January, $365,490. A new record for sales during the month of January, 175, and a new record for total dollar volume, $63.96 million. And if one looked at the numbers hard enough, they would see a market returning to pre-COVID pandemic normal in other areas. The A&M Center showed the number of homes available at the end of the month dropped below 600 for the first time since February 2020. The total was 584. The months of inventory also finished at its lowest number since February 2020, 2.3 months. So, the price is up and the inventory is dropping. The seller's market is again back in Midland. Not that it really went away. Even with increasing inventory during the pandemic, prices never really dropped. In fact, the A&M Real Estate Center reported that January was the 41st straight month that the average price for a home sold topped $300,000 in Midland County. The center also shows a new streak starting, as the median price for a home sold topped the $300,000 mark for the eighth straight month. The price numbers from January showed growth month over month and year over year. In terms of median price, the $330,000 was more than $20,000 greater than December and $10,000 greater than January 2021. Months of inventory not only dropped for the fourth straight month from 3.0 months to 2.3, but is 36% lower than the 3.6-month total in January 2021. This article is entitled PSP to Bring Training to Area. Skills Program Expansion in Collaboration with SkillPoint Alliance. By the Midland Reporter Telegram. SkillPoint Alliance, a Central Texas nonprofit organization that provides fast-paced, no-cost job training in the skilled trades to lower-income, underserved, and under-accessed populations, announced today that with support from the Permian Strategic Partnership, it is expanding its service to the Permian Basin in 2022. SkillPoint Permian Basin will offer rapid training programs in electrical, HVAC and plumbing, among other trades, to Permian Basin communities in West Texas and Southeast New Mexico, with programming launched by the end of 2022. Recent studies show that by 2025, continued industry growth and a shift toward a residential rather than rotational workforce in the basin will require 50,000 more workers, roughly half needed in the energy industry, to meet the needs across the local and regional economy. There are several occupations in the region that are considered to be in high demand, including electricians with a 22% growth through 2028, plumbers, pipe fitters, and steam fitters with a 20% growth through 2028, and HVAC mechanics and installers with a 19% growth through 2028. SkillPoint Alliance is excited to partner with the Permian Strategic Partnership to expand our programs that produce skilled professionals for some of the country's fastest-growing industries, including the energy industry, to West Texas and southeastern New Mexico, said Kevin Brackmeyer, executive director of SkillPoint Alliance. There is a critical need for experienced labor in the skilled trades in the region, as well as a need for programs that focus on rapid workforce development and employability skill building. SkillPoint training is a starting point that can lead to on-the-job training or additional education opportunities with one of the Permian Basin's community colleges. Participants in SkillPoint Alliance programs are often returning to the workforce after time away, have experienced a previous hardship, or are looking to learn foundational skills that will set them on a new pathway to employment in a short amount of time. SkillPoint Alliance will fill a critical workforce need in the Permian Basin, said Tracy Bentley, CEO of the Permian Strategic Partnership. Foundational knowledge in the skilled trades will allow those who are not currently engaged in the workforce to prepare for successful employment within the energy industry or with other companies that support the robust economy of the Permian Basin. The PSP saw a great need to identify those people who want to work but may need some skill building to be successful. We look forward to seeing the success stories that SkillPoint Alliance will produce as part of its initiative. As a first phase of its expansion into the Permian Basin, SkillPoint Alliance will be working to secure its office and training locations and hire key personnel by July. Positions include a Permian Basin program lead, office staff, class instructors, and a rural programming coordinator. SkillPoint Alliance is thankful to the Permian Strategic Partnership for the opportunity to provide the Permian Basin with rapid workforce education and training in industries that are vital to economic prosperity, said Melanie Flowers, chair of the board of directors at SkillPoint Alliance. The programs are free to all participants, and we are excited to not only train new professionals, but also to provide reliable and skilled employees to local companies in West Texas and Southeast New Mexico. Initial funds to expand the program to the Permian Basin will be provided through a grant allocated by the PSP. The training program has been funded through its first 4 years. After the grant period, the training program will have become an established part of the workforce ecosystem in the Permian Basin and will self-fund through a mix of philanthropic, state, and local dollars. Interested parties can visit skillpointalliance.org for more information, including hiring details about the training program. This article is entitled Couple Exchanges Vows on 2/22/22. A Midland couple exchanged vows on a special day. Jaden and Alexia Palmer, maiden name is Alvarez, were married at the courtroom of Midland County Justice of the Peace, Precinct 3, in front of family and friends. This article is entitled Cornyn Holds Human Trafficking Roundtable by J.C. Lewis. U.S. Senator John Cornyn, Republican, Texas, visited Reflection Ministries in Midland on Tuesday to discuss the reauthorization of the Trafficking Victims Protection Act. He met with Reflection Ministries founder and CEO Lisa Bounds, Midland County District Attorney Laura Nodolf, Midland Mayor Patrick Payton, Odessa Mayor Javier Halvin, Texas Department of Public Safety Public Relations official Steve Blanco, and Crisis Center of West Texas Executive Director Lori Dunham for a roundtable discussion. The Trafficking Victims Protection Act is what we are working on, Cornyn said. What I have learned is that often in human trafficking, one of the biggest unmet needs is simply a safe place for the victims or the survivors to live while they're recovering. Providing some resources through the Department of Justice, grants are available to help big-hearted organizations like Reflections Ministries. Cornyn said human trafficking is a nonpartisan issue, and he expects the legislation will pass to reauthorize the Trafficking Victims Protection Act. He added that part of the reauthorization will help expand the training of people in work positions to identify human trafficking victims. Blanco said the organization has several programs within the department to train troopers to combat human trafficking with local partners in the Midland and Odessa police departments and the sheriff's office in rural communities. One of the programs we have that we are very proud of is the Interdiction for the Protection of Children, Blanco said. It was started in 2009 by DPS Captain Derek Prestridge, and through that program, it teaches interdiction skills to our troopers that can be used whenever our troopers make a traffic stop when a child or adult is in the vehicle. There are signs and skills that those troopers can be trained with to recognize in order to rescue that victim. He said after victims are rescued, they can then be brought to an organization like Reflections Ministries. Blanco added that currently in the Permian Basin, human trafficking is a problem, and it ebbs and flows with the success of the oil field. The oil field brings in workers from all over the country, and sometimes when they're here in the Permian Basin, they don't make the best decisions being away from their families, he said. When they are in the Permian Basin, sometimes they may engage in illicit activities, including human trafficking, sex trafficking, and prostitution. DPS has continued programs to run sting operations to combat human trafficking in the Permian Basin, Blanco said. Nodolf said the numbers around human trafficking are still astounding to her. Oftentimes, we don't necessarily prosecute or arrest under human trafficking because the laws, under state law, allow for us to have a bigger reach for continuous sexual abuse of a child, she said. The numbers that are coming out of the Office of Court Administration for the state, it looks like trafficking is underreported because we're trying to use what we have at our disposal, which the continuous sexual abuse of a child is one of the greatest tools we have due to mandatory minimums and no parole. Nodolf added that Midland and Odessa's location along the interstate corridor makes the community simply a stop to human traffickers. The numbers don't paint the picture, Nodolf said. Nodolf said she is worried that government departments are spread too thin, but nonprofit organizations like Reflection Ministries are helping to step in and provide support to victims. She said it is just as important to have facilities for adults and juveniles. Bounds said there are less than 200 beds in Texas for juvenile sex trafficking victims, with about 100 beds for adult victims of sex trafficking. She said most girls are targeted from 12 to 14 years old, and boys are targeted between 11 to 13 years old. Bounds went on to talk about the prevalence of sex trafficking culture in the area. We have about 1,100 ads a day in the Permian Basin where you can buy someone on your phone, any device, and have them delivered to your door in 15 minutes, she said. Bounds said, this is a hard conversation to have, but they are conversations she has. I'm way past, have I offended you? Because if you knew what it was like to be sold, on a low number, over 15 to 20 times a day, and be bought by people that can do whatever they want to you, and you have no idea that there is any hope, she said. Peyton said there are economic Super Bowls happening across the country, which is contributing to sex trafficking. According to the Institute for Sport and Social Justice, there is a consistent spike of reported instances of human trafficking around the Super Bowl. We need to be calling out HBO and Netflix and other places that are breeding grounds for these things, he said. Rather than having a hearing about social media and what they're going to take off the air because of what a politician said, maybe social media needs to step up and be responsible in the traffic world, or be shut down because of what's happening to the destruction of young lives. Cornyn said he is grateful for the work being done at Reflection Ministries to deal with human trafficking. You, Bounds, are right. We need to have more difficult conversations because some of the statistics you cited were news to me, and I felt like I knew something about this topic due to exposure over many years, he said. This is tough stuff, but we owe it to the most vulnerable of our fellow Texans to deal with it as effectively as we can where we can, and when we can. The Trafficking Victims Protection Act, first enacted in 2000, created important protections for survivors of trafficking and authorized funding to combat trafficking. The bill was recently reauthorized in 2018, providing support for victims, enhanced training and funding for law enforcement, and holding traffickers accountable. Cornyn wants to permanently extend the Domestic Trafficking Victims Fund, which directly provides money to trafficking victims from fines collected from traffickers. This article is entitled Midland Christian: Those Arrested Won't Return Until Legal Process Finishes, by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. The Midland Christian School confirmed Tuesday that those five administrators and staff members arrested last week will not return to campus while their legal proceedings continue. Responding to a question about whether administrators would return this school year, Midland Christian provided the following to the Reporter-Telegram. Quote, "The individuals facing these allegations will not be on campus in an administrative role nor participating in the operation of the school until the legal system has completed its work, at which point a fully informed decision about their futures will be made." Unquote. Last week, five Midland Christian School administrators and employees were charged with failure to report with intent to conceal, neglect, or abuse, a state felony. The incident related to the arrests had to do with the failure to report an alleged sexual assault of a child in January. School officials previously stated that there are qualified acting administrators to supervise the campus, oversee student activities, support faculty, and maintain the day-to-day operation of the school. Quote, "The physical, spiritual, and emotional safety of our students is the most important responsibility we bear as educators and one we take seriously," school leaders previously said in a statement. "We appreciate the support and prayers of our Midland Christian parents, faculty, staff, and students as we continue leading, building, and equipping for Christ." Unquote. This article is entitled County Launches Property Fraud System, by Midland Reporter-Telegram. Midland County announced Tuesday the rollout of a property fraud alert system. GOVOS Property Fraud Alert Systems enables Midland County residents to subscribe to property record alerts and notifies them via email anytime a document is recorded with their name on it. There is no cost to residents to subscribe to this service, and there is no limit to the number of alerts a person can create. This added layer of protection for our community will help eliminate home title theft and give our citizens peace of mind that the land they own cannot be tampered with, said Allison Haley, county clerk for Midland County. Any newly recorded document that triggers an alert will send an email within hours of filing. The email will contain a link to the document in question. If that document looks suspicious, residents can then contact local law enforcement as well as their attorney to take further action. Residents who wish to subscribe for this service can go to midland.tx.publicsearch.us. For information about GOVOS Property Fraud Alert, go to govos.com/official-public-records. This article is entitled Pfluger to Hold Town Hall at Midland College, by Chandler France. U.S. Representative August Pfluger will hold a town hall from 5 to 6 p.m. Tuesday inside the Midland College Fine Arts Building, Wagner and Brown Auditorium, according to a newsletter from the congressman. The San Angelo Republican hosted multiple town halls last week across Congressional District 11, with additional events planned in Sterling City and Robert Lee Thursday and Friday. Pfluger is finishing his first term representing District 11. He is running unopposed in the Republican primary for the district, and there are no candidates in the Democratic primary for the seat. Pfluger recently announced his Midland over Moscow Act, which he said would strengthen U.S. energy independence as well as help U.S. allies become less dependent on energy from Russia. This column is called AP Explainer. It is entitled, What is the Nord Stream 2 Pipeline? By David McHugh, AP business writer. Frankfurt, Germany. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz has suspended the certification process for the Nord Stream 2 natural gas pipeline after Russia recognized separatist-held regions in eastern Ukraine. The undersea pipeline directly links Russian gas to Europe via Germany and is complete but not yet operating. It has become a major target as Western governments try to exert leverage on Russia to deter further military moves against its neighbor. Here are key things to understand about the pipeline. What is Nord Stream 2? It's a 1,764-mile-long natural gas pipeline under the Baltic Sea, running from Russia to Germany's Baltic coast. It runs parallel to an earlier Nord Stream pipeline and would double its capacity to 110 billion cubic meters of gas a year. It means Gazprom can send gas to Europe's pipeline system without using existing pipelines running through Ukraine and Poland. The pipeline has been filled with gas, but has been waiting approval by Germany and the European Commission. How is Scholz blocking the pipeline? Germany's utility regulator was reviewing the pipeline for compliance with European regulations on fair competition. It's that approval process that Scholz said Tuesday that he was suspending. Germany was required to submit a report on how the pipeline would affect energy security, and Scholz said that the report was being withdrawn. Why is Scholz taking action now? Scholz, who took power in December, backed the project as finance minister for his predecessor Angela Merkel, and his Social Democratic Party supported it. As Russia massed troops near Ukraine's border, Scholz avoided referring to Nord Stream 2 specifically, even as U.S. officials said it would not move forward if Russia invaded. But Scholz warned that Russia would face, quote, severe consequences, unquote, and that sanctions must be ready ahead of time. Germany had agreed with the U.S. to act against Nord Stream 2 if Russia used gas as a weapon or attacked Ukraine. The chancellor said Tuesday that Russia recognizing the independence of rebel-held areas in Ukraine marked a serious break of international law, and that it was necessary to send a clear signal to Moscow that such actions won't remain without consequences. Why does Russia want the pipeline? State-owned gas giant Gazprom says it will meet Europe's growing need for affordable natural gas and complement existing pipelines through Belarus and Ukraine. Nord Stream 2 would offer an alternative to Ukraine's aging system that Gazprom says needs refurbishment, lower costs by saving transit fees paid to Ukraine, and avoid episodes like brief 2006 and 2009 gas cutoffs over price and payment disputes between Russia and Ukraine. Europe is a key market for Gazprom, whose sales support the Russian government budget. Europe needs gas because it's replacing decommissioned coal and nuclear plants before renewable energy sources such as wind and solar are sufficiently built up. Why is the U.S. against Nord Stream 2? The White House was in close consultations with Germany and welcomed their announcement, Press Secretary Jen Psaki tweeted Tuesday. The U.S., European NATO allies, such as Poland and Ukraine, have opposed the project going back before the Biden administration, saying it increases Europe's dependence on Russian gas and gives Russia the possibility of using gas as a geopolitical weapon. Europe imports most of its gas and gets roughly 40% of its supply from Russia. The pipeline, which went forward under Merkel, has been an irritant to U.S.-German relations. Biden waived sanctions against the pipeline's operator when it was almost complete in return for an agreement from Germany to take action against Russia if it used gas as a weapon or attacks Ukraine. In Congress, Republicans and Democrats, in a rare bit of agreement, have long objected to Nord Stream 2. Will suspending Nord Stream 2 make Europeans freeze this winter? No. Even before Scholz's move, regulators made clear the approval process could not be completed in the first half of the year. That means the pipeline was not going to help meet heating and electricity needs this winter as the continent faces a gas shortage. The winter shortage has continued to feed concerns about relying on Russian gas. Russia held back from short-term gas sales, even though it fulfilled long-term contracts with European customers and failed to fill its underground storage in Europe. Russian President Vladimir Putin has said the shortage underlines the need to quickly approve Nord Stream 2, increasing concerns about Russia using gas to gain leverage over Europe. Could Russia cut off gas to Europe in retaliation? While Europe needs Russian gas, Gazprom also needs the European market. That interdependence is why many think Russia won't cut off supplies to Europe, and Russian officials have underlined they have no intention to do that. Meanwhile, the Ukraine crisis, on top of the winter shortage, has already given European governments more reason to find their gas somewhere else, such as through liquefied natural gas, or LNG, brought by ship from the U.S., Algeria, and other places. Former Russian President Dmitry Medvedev, who is now deputy chair of Russia's Security Council, tweeted his displeasure after Germany suspended Nord Stream 2. "Welcome to the brave new world, where Europeans are very soon going to pay 2,000 euros for 1.000 cubic meters of natural gas." The spot market gas price in Europe was 829 euros, $940, per 1,000 cubic meters Wednesday. It was 1,743 euros, nearly $2,000, in late December, amid jitters over the Ukraine crisis. And prices have since fallen as Europe has secured more LNG. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, February 23rd. Bertha Marie Sansom Jarrett. Bertha Marie Sansom Jarrett, 94, of Midland, passed away on February 14th. Bert Jarrett was born in Uvalde, Texas, on November 15th, 1927, to parents Willis and Nellie Sansom. Bert is survived by her two sons, Jeff and wife Renee of Midland, and John and wife Robin of Durant, Oklahoma. Four grandchildren, three great-grandchildren, multiple nieces and nephews, as well as other family and many friends. She is preceded in death by her husband David, her daughter Janine, and siblings Howard Thiel, Robert Sansom, Willis Sansom, Virginia Power, George Sansom, and Ira Sansom. A family memorial service will be held at 3 p.m. on Saturday, February 26, at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Carl Williams will officiate the graveside service. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be given to the Alzheimer's Association. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Darrell Wayne Ward. Darrell Wayne Ward, 69, of Midland, went home to Jesus on Friday, February 18th. Visitation will be from 6 to 8 p.m. Tuesday, February 22nd at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. A memorial mass will be 10 a.m. Wednesday, February 23rd at St. Anne's Catholic Church. Darrell was born August 29, 1952, in Wichita, Kansas, to Carlton Ward and Helen DeSteger Ward. Those left to cherish Darrell's memories are his loving wife of 20 years, Armine Ward of Midland, sons Bradley Ward and Brandon Ward, brother Roger Ward of Klamath, Oregon, father-in-law Ron and Ann Forrest of Midland, mother-in-law Armina Forrest of Midland, brother-in-law Ron and Corey Forrest of Montgomery, Texas. He is preceded in death by his parents, Carlton Ray Ward and Helen Jane Ward, and brother Pee-wee Ward. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickland Wells Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Patricia Joanne Golston. Patricia Joanne Golston of Midland left this world on February 13th. Joanne was born March 16, 1936, in Burke Burnett, Texas, to Charles and Rose Phillips. Survivors include her daughter, Chris Eve Dunlap, and her husband, Forrest Dunlap III of Horseshoe Bay, her grandson, Forrest Miller Dunlap IV of Mountain View, California. She is preceded in death by her husband, Charles Golston, her parents, Charles and Rose Phillips, sister Tony Budd, and brother Charles Phillip Jr. A memorial service will be held Thursday, February 24th at 2 p.m. at First United Methodist Church in Midland. In lieu of flowers, please send all donations to the First United Methodist Church in the name of Joanne Golston. John Arthur Odom. John Arthur Odom, 59, passed away on Thursday, February 10th at Sterling Hills Rehabilitation Center in Sweetwater. Private graveside rites were held on Tuesday, February 22nd at Resthaven Cemetery in Midland, officiated by Pastor Steve Shore of First Presbyterian Church. John was born on December 6, 1963 in Maracaibo, Venezuela, to Arthur M. and Marilyn Bitsy Odom. John is survived by Sherry Boyd Odom, caretaker and sister-in-law, Harold Odom, caretaker and cousin, nephew Britt Harbin and wife Kirby, niece Brandy Harbin, as well as great nieces and many uncles, aunts, cousins, and relatives, and special friend Mrs. Sudie Bedford. He is preceded in death by his father, Arthur M. Odom, mother Marilyn Bitsy Odom, brother Christopher Odom, and special friend H.G. Bedford. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickland Wells Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Leonard Ray Stickle. Leonard Ray Stickle of Midland passed away on February 20th. Leonard was born in East Chicago, Indiana, to Marvin Ray Stickle and Nell Marie Harper on March 17, 1958. Leonard was preceded in death by his parents, brother Stephen Short, and his parents in the Lord, Royce and Patsy Marriott. Leonard is survived by his wife Teresa, sons Caleb Stickle and wife Christina, Daniel Stickle and his wife Kristen, daughter Hannah Robison and her husband Thad, as well as eight darling grandchildren. Viewing will be Wednesday, February 23rd from 1 p.m. to 8 p.m. and Thursday, February 24th from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Family will receive friends on Thursday, February 24th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Willowbrook Funeral Home, 1311 West Florida Avenue, Midland. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. on Friday, February 25th at Wilshire Park Baptist Church, with pastors Larry L. Long and Lonnie Phillips officiating. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. A reception and meal will follow back at Wilshire Park. Arrangements are entrusted to Willowbrook Funeral Home. To place online condolences, please visit www.willowbrk.com. In lieu of flowers, donations in Leonard's name can be sent to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital in Memphis, the Salvation Army, or to the Disabled American Veterans. Laura Hale Davis. Laura Hale Davis, 96, loving wife, mother, and grandmother, passed away peacefully at home on Thursday, February 17th. Laura was born on November 30th, 1925, in Lorain, Texas, to Nettie and Charlie Hale. Laura is preceded in death by her parents, Charlie and Nettie Hale, sisters Mamie McFerrin, Averill Badgett, Bernice Vanoy, Jean Aunt Padgett, brother Charles Hale, and son-in-law L.B. Tennyson, Jr. Laura is survived by daughters Tanya Tennyson of Odessa and Catherine Billington and her husband Randy Billington of Midland, 7 grandchildren, 28 great-grandchildren, and 8 great-great-grandchildren, 4 brothers, Doyle Hale of Stanton, Bill Hale of Brownwood, Hubert Hale and wife Flo of Stanton, Kenneth Hale and wife Bobby Fay of Proctor, 1 sister, Betty Sue Crocker of Big Spring, as well as numerous nieces and nephews. Visitation with the family is scheduled for 7 to 9 p.m. Friday, February 25th at Nellie Picklinwell's funeral home. Services are scheduled Saturday, February 26th at 9:30 a.m. at Cotton Flat Baptist Church, with Rick Holman and Jimmy Skiles officiating. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Hospice of Midland, Cotton Flat Baptist Church, Greenfield Acres Baptist Church, or the charity of your choice. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Thomas Flournoy. Thomas Tommy Olin Flournoy, age 87, passed peacefully away in Midland with his wife Jacqueline and eldest son Donathan by his side on February 20th. Thomas was born March 2, 1924, to William G. Flournoy and Bertha E. Nolan Flournoy. Thomas is preceded in death by his parents, William and Bertha Flournoy, his 2 sisters, Bessie Barba and Bertha Harding, his 7 brothers, Baby, William, Fred, Everett, Francis, Alfred, and Claude. Also his 3 sons, Burton Thomas, William Nolan, and Burton William, and 2 grandsons, Alexander Griesendorf and Bryce Nettles. Thomas is survived by his wife Jacqueline Flournoy of Midland, his 2 daughters, Tiffany Geisendorf of Seely, Texas, and Cassie Nettles Garrity, and husband James of Midland. His 3 sons, Donathan Flournoy and wife Maria of Midland, Mark Flournoy of Paint Rock, Texas, and Randall Flournoy and wife Christy of Midland, as well as 15 grandchildren, 13 great-grandchildren, and 5 great-great-grandchildren. The viewing will be Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral service will be Friday, February 25th at 11 a.m. at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, located at 2101 Tarleton Street. Directly following is the graveside service at 1 p.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Death notices. Colvin Domingo. Colvin Domingo, 71, of Midland, passed away February 20th. Rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Friday, February 25th at Nellie Picklinwell's Funeral Home Chapel. Memorial Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, February 26th at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. John F. Jack Driggs, Jr. John F. Jack Driggs, Jr., 84, of Midland, passed away February 18th. No service is planned. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklinwell's Funeral Home. Juanita Helmer. Juanita Helmer, 97, of Midland, passed away February 22nd. Service is pending with Nellie Picklinwell's Funeral Home. Lorenzo Garza Astorga. Lorenzo Garza Astorga, 72, of Midland, passed away Thursday, February 17th. Viewing will be Monday, February 21st from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Tuesday, February 22nd from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. with a prayer service at 7 p.m. Tuesday at Templo Alabanza y Poder. Funeral service is set for Wednesday, February 23rd at 10 a.m. at Templo Alabanza y Poder. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Margie Machan Bradley. Margie Machan Bradley, 89, of Midland, passed away February 21st. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, February 25th at North A Church of Christ in Midland. Graveside service will be held at 3 p.m. Friday, February 25th at Rowena Protestant Cemetery in Rowena, Texas. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Pat Stewart. Pat Stewart, 74, of Midland, passed away February 19th. No service is planned. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
This is Connie reading the Odessa American for February 23rd, 2022. Exchange turns heated during county meeting. ARPA funds still part of political battle in Ector County by Kim Smith. A routine Ector County Commissioners Court meeting grew heated Tuesday when County Court Judge candidate Dustin Fawcett created an opportunity at the end of the meeting to once again question the commissioners about how they plan to spend American Rescue Plan Act money. On Tuesday morning, the commissioners had to vote again on whether they wanted to hire Grant Works Incorporated of Austin to vet organizations seeking some of the county's $32 million ARPA funds. They had voted unanimously last month to give Grant Works the contract, but it later came to light that Commissioner Armando Rodriguez's vote should not be counted because he attended the meeting via telephone, County Judge Debbie Hayes said. Allowances made during COVID-19 are no longer authorized. The motion was passed 5-0 again. Fawcett did not offer any comments during that discussion, which was listed as number 14 on the agenda, but approached the court 14 items later after the commissioners voted to go into executive session at the end of the meeting. Fawcett told the commissioners he wanted to know if the county would be holding public meetings or creating request forms for those seeking funding. He also questioned whether the county is considering spending any of the money on water infrastructure or improving broadband connections. He wanted to know what they've spent the money on so far, too. Fawcett has repeatedly suggested the county hired an outside firm to determine where the money should be spent, instead of performing the duties they were elected to do. After pointing out that 95% of what Fawcett was saying had nothing to do with the agenda item, Commissioner Mike Gardner sought to dispel any misconceptions. "We're not using them to go out and say, 'Hey, Mike, you need to spend money out there for Ector County Utility District.' I know that. I don't need anybody to tell me to do that. I don't need anybody to tell me that we need some fire stations on the west side of Odessa to bring down property taxes. I don't need Grant Works to tell me that. I need Grant Works to make sure they look at a project that we're looking at and say, 'That's a legal project use, and this is how that money can be spent.'" Fawcett interrupted Gardner to ask if any money had been spent yet, and Gardner and Hayes informed him they've spent money in the district court to move cases forward, and they've reimbursed the county for revenue lost. Hayes assured Fawcett and the audience the county will address the needs of the residents. I deeply appreciate Mr. Fawcett in his passion, and I understand working for Medical Center Hospital that you definitely want to advocate for the funds for Medical Hospital. The Commissioner's Court has said that they will address the hospital. Fawcett tried to interrupt again to say he's been advocating for the whole community. And when Hayes says she had a prepared press release she wanted to read that might answer some of his questions, he cut in to say he wanted his questions answered first. Continuing to read, Hayes said some ARPA funds can be allocated to ECUD, and the county is interested in fire stations in all three areas of the county, improved broadband, and cleaning up abandoned properties. Meetings are ongoing, she said. When Fawcett broke in to ask if the meetings were public, Commissioner Greg Simmons jumped in. I'm going to shut you down because we're not here for your political opponent or your political high scores, Simmons said. When Fawcett again interjected, Simmons responded with a curt, I'm talking now. So bottom line, we have 5 years to spend this money. We're not going to be pressured into it based on your 1 week till election date to come up with a decision. So after the election, whether you're up here or out there, we'll be glad to discuss it more with you. But otherwise, we appreciate your time today, sir. In other action, the commissioners voted 5-0 to pass newly amended ordinances concerning game rooms. New game rooms must now be 1,500 feet from neighborhoods instead of the current 300 feet and 1,500 feet from each other. They must also have a transparent exterior window in the front. In addition, no more than 50 game rooms will be allowed to exist within unincorporated Ector County. County Attorney Lee McLendon said there are more than 50 now, but once the numbers fall below 50, they'll remain below 50. The businesses can have no more than 50 games operating at any one time, and they must limit their hours to 8 a.m. to 11 p.m., Sunday through Thursday, and 8 a.m. to midnight, Friday and Saturday. The commissioners also voted to table discussion about expanding the cemetery in the Donna Rabb addition until holding community forums, voted 5-0 to begin reserving 11 parking places at the health department for staff members now being forced to park elsewhere during jury weeks, agreed to allow Vicksburg, Texas to hold a low-cost vaccination clinic on March 5th from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. at the Ector County Coliseum. Approved scheduling Ector County Independent School District's bond election for May 7th. Don't forget to early vote. Early voting numbers down compared to 2020 by Royal McGregor. Through the first 8 days of early voting in Ector County, there have been 3,282 ballots cast. Those numbers are down compared to 2020, when there were 6,696 early voting ballots, but there are still several days left to vote. Ector County Elections Administrator Lisa Sertucci said via the phone that she remains hopeful as there are 3 days to early voting. I'm hoping our numbers will increase by Friday, Sertucci said. Early voting concludes Friday as branch locations are open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Those branches include Kellis Turner Community Building, 2230 Sycamore Drive, the Globe Theater at Odessa College, 2308 Shakespeare Road, Salinas Community Building, 600 West Clement Street, and MCM Elegante Hotel, Hawaiian Ballroom, 5200 East University Boulevard. On Tuesday morning, the polling location at the MCM Elegante Hotel, where Ron Hughes, who is running for Justice of the Peace, Precinct 2, was talking with voters. A lot of people see the campaign signs and they get all the campaign literature in the mail, Hughes says. Sometimes they get overwhelmed and don't know what to think of all the information. Being out here in person, talking to them, introducing myself, letting them know why I'm running and what I'm about, it gives them the opportunity to meet me and give them an opportunity to ask questions. One of the voters to cast her ballot at the MCM Elegante Hotel was Janet Davis. She moved to Odessa a year ago, so this marked her first election in the Permian Basin. She says she moved from Bexar County. Davis says she wanted to cast her ballot before Election Day, scheduled for March 1st, because she wanted to ensure that her voice would be heard. I can cast my vote any day, but I never know what is going to come up, Davis said. Still from the front page, Time to Have Uncomfortable Conversations by Royal McGregor. Midland. During Tuesday's roundtable discussion about human trafficking, Senator John Cornyn, the phrase modern-day slavery and uncomfortable conversations were front and center. The roundtable discussion took place at Reflections Ministries, which is an emergency assessment center with second-stage homes and aftercare programs designed to help sex trafficking. In addition to Cornyn, the discussion featured Reflections Ministries founder and CEO Lisa Bounds, Midland Mayor Patrick Payton, Odessa Mayor Javier Hoven, Midland County District Attorney Laura Noduff, Texas Department of Public Safety Public Relations Sergeant Steve Blanco, and Lori Dunham, Crisis Center of West Texas Executive Director. Cornyn spoke about the Trafficking Victims Protection Act, bipartisan legislation that became law in 2017 that he co-sponsored along with 25 other senators. The law extends funding to prevent human trafficking, improves training for government staff, expands civil and privacy protections for trafficking survivors, and renews trafficking preventing and survivor support programs. It's a sobering and serious topic, but it's one that we need to talk about and that we need to figure out how we can solve some of the root problems, Cornyn said. This is not a local problem. It's a global phenomenon. Bounds detailed in her opening statement about the roundtable discussion that human trafficking is a challenging subject. She also said there are less than 200 beds available in Texas for children who are victims of human trafficking. Bounds also told Cornyn the expanse of social media has allowed for people to be purchased online and be delivered to their doorstep in less than 15 minutes. She said there are 1,100 ads a day in the Permian Basin that involved human trafficking. Bounds gave a handful of staggering statistics throughout the roundtable discussion about human trafficking. Those statistics included a person could be sold at minimum 20 times a day. 46% of human trafficking victims are sold by their family. 67% of sexual buyers are white, educated men with disposable income. When you look at 85% of trafficking victims born in the United States, Bounds said, "We don't have to bring them over from anywhere else. We work closely with three organizations that will handle the international aspect. We mainly focus on U.S. citizens." Blanco discussed training that law enforcement does to combat human trafficking. He gave an example of a training that DPS Captain Derek Prestige created called Interdiction for the Protection of Children. The IPC training helps patrol officers establish the status of a child who may be missing, exploited, or at risk of exploitation, and what courses of action are immediately available. Nordoff spoke about the criminal steps taken to assist victims of human trafficking. She explained there is a bigger picture, and the Odessa-Midland area is only a stop on the I-20 corridor. They have to be addressed as the victims, Nordoff said about individuals who are being human trafficked, not as criminals. Peyton talked a variety of ways to combat human trafficking. While Hoven applauds Bounds for having those uncomfortable conversations, as he also wants to have those. Peyton explained the answer to West Texas won't be the same for New Mexico or Oklahoma or Louisiana or Mississippi or California. He also said that it is important for oil companies to remind their employees about being aware of human trafficking. "We can't just throw a blanket over this," Peyton said. "We have to be very specific. We need to get to the bottom of this."
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.